Oh, the shape that will get. You've let all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I'm not playing mind games. I'm talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladici, I would probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
I suggest you shut up and show more football.
When Kenny Dalglish lifted the English title, it seemed like the continuation of something great. After the heartbreak of 89, the most successful club in England had been crowned champions once again, and things were back to normal. Since that day, the last day Liverpool won the league, a few things have changed. Jordan Henderson was born, Friends would become the biggest show in the world. The internet was launched, the Euro became a thing. The Berlin Wall came down, Peter Schmeichel would sign for United, win the league five times, and then his son Casper would grow up and go on to win the league with Leicester. Facebook would take over the world, the iPhone was invented. Jeremy Clarkson was sacked by the BBC, Leicester City would win the league. Croatia would become a nation and make it to the World Cup final. Paul Scholes became a professional footballer, won the league 10 times, retired, came back and then won the Premier League once again. America elected a reality TV show to the Oval Office. The UK left the EU. Elon Musk sent a rocket ship to space. Pep Guardiola became a footballer, won 6 La Liga titles with Barcelona, retired, became the manager, won 3 La Liga titles, 11 trophies, took over Bayern Munich, took over Man City, and won the league 2 times. The Undertaker joined the WWE, won 21 WrestleMania matches, and then retired. The UK have had 7 prime ministers, 5 US presidents. United have won the league 13 times. Mayo have lost 8 All-Irelands. 33 new countries have been established. 19 new iPhones have been released. There have been 6 FIFA World Cup winners. 7 different clubs have won the English League. 8 different people have managed Liverpool. 2.3 billion people have been born, and there has been a 300% rise in the price of petrol. Not bad for the last 30 years.
When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high, and don't be afraid of the dark.
As Liverpool come out, they know that the light is beckoning at the end of the tunnel.
Such agony here 11 months ago, when Arsenal took the title from them with virtually the last kick of that season. Lesser clubs than Liverpool would have taken years to recover from that, but here failure only stimulates more urgent searches for success. Kenny Dalglish's 3rd championship in only 5 years as manager. For the 18th time, Liverpool are the champions.
Oh, and Jarrett slipped, and Denver Barr's in here. Out comes Minnie Leigh, but Barr punishes of all people Steven Gerrard.
For me, it's one of the biggest clubs in the world, and gave me this opportunity to try to help in a situation that's not so difficult like all the people in this room feel. I think it's not the perfect moment, of course, but I feel it's a good moment to come here, and so I feel really proud.
And it's, there are always a couple of people who can tell you, yeah, but you didn't win. So now, let's talk about 6, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be.
First and foremost, I have to say congratulations to City. I've said it a couple of times, but I don't want that any broadcaster miss that, because that's important. They played an incredible season. We did as well, but you won it, and that's congratulations. To Pep and all the people from Manchester City.
Liverpool had the greatest season in their entire life, and they still came second. It's too funny.
To Sadio Mane, who makes it 3-0. What a ball from Jordan Henderson in behind the Manchester City defence, and a diving header from Sadio Mane surely seals all 3 points, and a huge victory for Liverpool. It's Liverpool 3, Manchester City 0. Sadio Mane.
Chance for Salah to make it 2-0. United getting back. Mo Salah to Salah for Liverpool. Salah scores in front of the cup. And Liverpool are
Newcastle goals on a flawless performance, a performance of champions at Fortress Anfield for Liverpool, a 23rd straight home win in the Premier League, 56 home games unbeaten, and that Fortress, the next time they return here in 10 days' time, may have the silverware they all want. It's been a stunning performance, four wonderful goals from Alexander-Arnold, Mo Salah, Fabinho and Sadio Mane. Liverpool showing why they are 23 points clear at the top of the Premier League table. And this time tomorrow, if Manchester City don't win at Stamford Bridge, Liverpool will be the champions of England. And a mistake, and now an opportunity for Chelsea to come. And they just left it for each other, the two Manchester City players. Pulisic skips past challenge, clear through and goal. Christian Pulisic puts it in low into the right-hand corner. Chelsea lead Manchester City by a goal to nil. De Bruyne over this free kick, steps up, right footed, oh, into the top corner. That is wonderful from Kevin De Bruyne, and he gives Manchester City a fighting chance. Willian steps up, right footed, from the spot, and smashes it into the top corner. Chelsea lead Manchester City by 2-1. 96 on the clock, a number so important to Liverpool Football Club. Silence at Stamford Bridge, but roars of celebration from around the world because Liverpool are the champions of England. Finally, finally, Liverpool can say they have won the Premier League title after 30 years of waiting. 30 years that saw them knocked off their perch, but Liverpool are back, and they have done it with one of the greatest Premier League seasons we have ever seen. The champions of Europe are the champions of England. Chelsea have beaten Manchester City by 2-1, but the story is that Liverpool have won the Premier League title with 7 games to spare.
Yes, you're very welcome along to Team 33. It is 30 years since Liverpool have won the title. Endicall here with you in the company of Jack O'Toole and Oisin McCearns, because we are talking about a big, big day for Liverpool. Lads, how are you getting on?
Enda, how are you?
I should say to everyone listening, this is the group that were the key figures of Action Replay Extra Time back in the day in DCU. So we've come a long way, lads.
Big reunion, Enda. Yeah, it's great to see the lads. Great to talk to the lads and chat a bit of football.
If anything, this is a bigger deal than Liverpool winning the league.
100%. This is the only thing that's mattered in the last 30 years, essentially, really, this.
So there's a big... For people watching on YouTube, there's a big picture of Jurgen Klopp hugging Jordan Henderson behind me. That's after they won the sixth European Cup Champions League off the club's history. They won the first league in 30 years last night. It's a big moment. Jack O'Toole, what do you make of it all?
Yeah, I suppose like long time coming, I suppose. Like they'd had a couple of near brushes over the last decade, particularly obviously last season in 97 and still falling short. But now obviously, look, I think Klopp obviously gets a lot of credit for it, but Michael Edwards behind the scenes, I think the big difference for me is just the transfers they've hit on. Pretty much like selling Coutinho. I know they brought in Mane before that, but they pretty much brought in Van Dijk, Robertson, Fabinho. Like they have very rarely missed on transfers under Edwards. And then if you go back before that, like, I mean, just the years of the Paul Konchesky's and the David Ngoggs and Balotelli's, like Andy Carroll's, they were missing on a lot of them. But I think since Edwards has really kind of stepped up into the sporting director role, they've been more or less lights out. And obviously Klopp, and you get the likes of Trent and Robertson really kind of developing over the last couple of years. So, they're just an outstanding football team, really, aren't they?
When you look back at the great teams of the past, a lot of the people, Alex Ferguson, for example, it took him a couple of years before he won a league title with United. But once he won that, it was title after title. That was the breakthrough moment, the sliding doors moment, if you will. Oisin, do you think there's going to be something similar for Liverpool over the next few years? Is this just the start of 4 or 5 league titles for Klopp?
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think that's what will really define Liverpool as a great team, because so many people do say that they're one. Well, I mean, the stats don't really lie. Like, I have only 2 draws and 1 loss so far this season. Winning the league with, 7 games to go. That does define you as one of the greatest teams of the Premier League era. But I think what will really cement that will be if they can keep it going, if they can get a kind of dynasty going, and if they can win 4 or 5 titles maybe in the next few years. that'll kind of define them. But to be fair, there do seem to be a lot of challenges. Like, Manchester City are still a fantastic team. I don't think there's any kind of doubt in that. I know this season they've been a bit iffy, but the squad that they put together, like, they're going forward, they're unbelievable. If the Champions League ban might have a little bit of an effect, if that comes in, who knows. Manchester United as well look like they could come back. They've got an exciting team. Chelsea are splashing the cash again. So it seems as though there will be challenges over the next few years. But yeah, I think that will probably define Liverpool's legacy, Klopp's legacy, if he can win more than one title, I would say.
Jack, you sort of referenced it earlier on there. Like, this has been a long time coming for Liverpool. There's been a lot of false dawns. There's been a lot of sort of laughing stocks when it comes to Liverpool in terms of the size of the club. But over the last couple of years, Klopp has just brought this together. And is it down to his tactics? I know Graham Souness said last night it was more down to the leaders, but is it more down to Klopp's ability to bring together a group of players who hadn't necessarily won anything in their past and then bring them together into the system? Was it the players that suited the system best, or did Klopp just recruit perfectly?
I think it's probably a little bit mixture of both. I'd say it's more recruitment. I think obviously, like, the Van Dijk signing really seemed to change everything. He just the numbers on their kind of like defensive statistics just went completely kind of flipped when he joined. And then they finally got a goalkeeper that was, you know, not prone to complete howlers. Like, that definitely seemed to make a difference as well. But for me, it was probably like one was the recruitment of. I suppose you have like Mane and Salah on the wings, and then you've got like this kind of perfect false nine in Firmino there. And then even with the two fullbacks, like, just crossing the ball in from all over the place, it kind of really kind of stretches them, I think, and gives them a lot more width. So, and then they seem to, particularly in the big games, they usually kind of go with some kind of combination of Fabinho, Wijnaldum and Henderson. But they rotate a lot of different kind of midfielders in and out of there, with like the likes of Oxlade-Chamberlain as well, so, and Milner. So just good depth. And I mean, and I know Milner's kind of getting on. But other than that, a lot of the guys seem to be on the right side of 30 as well. So I agree with Oisin. Like, I think what have they lost? Like, two games over the last two seasons in the league? Like, it's hard to see. I know Chelsea have kind of brought a couple of signings in. United might make some stuff in the summer, but it's hard to see anything changing in the immediate future unless they start losing a couple of players abroad.
Well, the talk is that they're not actually going to build upon this team. Is this team good enough to win another league title next year as it stands, with the likes of Chelsea building, Man City probably going to build on it again, Manchester United coming stronger than they were in the last couple of years? So I know they won it by a massive margin this year, but surely next year they're going to need at least one or two signings to sort of revamp it again.
I'd be interested to see what would happen, because they've kind of been quite lucky in the sense they haven't had any of their big names really out injured over the last two seasons, no long-term injuries anyway. So I'd be interested to see if like a Mane goes down, if a Van Dijk goes down for a long time, even if an Alisson goes down for, I know he was out a little bit and they had Adrian in, but if he was out for a long extended period of time, I'd be interested to see then how they perform, because like Origi's kind of a cult hero in a way at Liverpool now because of his goal in the Champions League final, and he's obviously scored that goal against Barcelona as well, but he's not, I don't think he's probably Premier League winning quality striker, especially if he needs to play for 12-13 games. So that's where I don't know if this time next year we look at the Werner thing and think, did they miss a little bit of a trick there? Because I know Ferguson always kind of, a great thing about Ferguson's management was that he was never kind of satisfied. He always would build every season and add more quality every season to kind of keep his opponents on their toes a little bit. Whether Liverpool are just so good that they don't need that, or I'm not entirely sure, but I do think it'll be interesting to see next season whether we look back on especially the Werner one and think, should they have splashed the cash, got him and had a perfect replacement or kind of thing for Firmino, or really any of the front three, I suppose.
Well, if you look at some of the reports at the minute, what has been said out there is that they want to let Minamino a chance to develop. Keita needs to develop a little bit more, and even the likes of Jones coming through from the academy, giving him space to break into the first team as well. But Alex Ferguson used to always say that you didn't need 11 good players to win the league. You needed 8 or 9 players to be playing absolutely to the top of their game throughout the season, and then that, the rest, the 3 others would carry the team, and then you might have a few subs that would be impact players that come off the bench. Liverpool still, to me, lack a little bit of depth. If the likes of Robertson gets injured, they don't really have a replacement at left back. James Milner has been filling in there. Virgil van Dijk, if he goes out, you're still looking at the likes of Lovren coming in to replace him. So they do need a couple of key signings in key areas to carry this on. If we look at the teams in the past, they've always built upon winning the league, but it doesn't seem Liverpool are going to do that. Do you think that's a little bit of complacency, Jack?
I don't know how I really like complacency. Like, there definitely are positions that they can strengthen in. Left back would be one of them. As Oisin was saying, backup striker would be another. I just, even with these like Jadon Sancho links and stuff like that, like, you're going to have to find a player that's going to be happy to kind of sit behind one of those players. Because at the moment for me, it's kind of like, if it's not broke, don't fix it. I don't know why you'd mess with that kind of Mane, Salah, and Firmino threat up front. So, backup striker, left back, centre back. I don't mind Matip and Gomez. Obviously, Lovren definitely has his moments. So maybe you kind of look at that. But yeah, other than that, like, across the board, I think they're pretty strong. Like, it's if Ox kind of comes back into it, you still got Milner there, you still got Keita, how he develops, midfield strong. So definitely so, but they've won it by a landslide this year, and it was 97 points last year. So I mean, short of major injuries, it's just hard to see. City maybe obviously a natural contender if they can get more consistency next season and maybe sort out that kind of Stones, Otamendi, Fernandinho getting a red card last night. Like, if they can get like long term and Mendy obviously doing his horror show, like, if they can sort their defense out, because they've been quite patchy. And we'll wait and see what Chelsea does with Ziyech and Werner and potentially even Havertz as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. But at the moment, I think they're very solid. One or two more signings and it's only going to really strengthen it, isn't it?
Well, 239 players have played for Liverpool since they last won the league. They spent 1.4 billion. So it's been a long time coming. How good is this Liverpool side? Where does it stand amongst the great Premier League sides? Oisin, you have it right up there, apparently. Like, is it better than United's 08 side? Better than Jose Mourinho's first stint at Chelsea? Where do they rank?
Yeah, I think it's up there. But again, I think they kind of have to show, like, in terms of consistency, to be fair, you look at last season as well, 97 points, like, that's unbelievable. That would win the league any other season. So, yeah, I think they're right up there. Are they better than United in 08? Hard to say. Could probably argue that United had better challengers in 08, maybe, than Liverpool have now. City, good side, but they had an iffy season. I'd rank them right up there.
Well, that 08 stint, the 07 to 2011, you had an English side in the Champions League pretty much every year.
Yeah.
So you're looking at the strength of the English Premier League at that stage comparing to Man City. Well, Man City could shock us and go on to the Champions League final this year, but overall, I think the league was probably stronger at that point.
Yeah, and there is only two, like, it is only Liverpool and City. Like, at this season, no one else is touching it. Like, that season, like, you had your likes, you had Liverpool who were kind of contending around then. You had Arsenal, obviously, who were a brilliant side back then. Chelsea, still contending, so there was a lot more competition. As a whole, I think that this Liverpool side has to go down. Like, to win the game, like, or to win the season with 7 games to go is, like, no matter. I mean, you can look at the anything you want, really, any stat. That's unbelievable. And to do it with 2 draws and 1 loss, that's incredible. I know you look back at the Invincibles, the Arsenal team, but I think they drew 12 games that season. So you definitely have to put them up there, I think. But I will be super intrigued to see now next season how they kind of. Can they, because like they do say, like, a hungry dog runs faster, so like, will they still be as kind of as gung-ho to win that title to defend it, or will there be teams in and around your Chelsea's, your Chelsea's, your Manchester United's, your Man City's, will they be hungrier than Liverpool to reclaim the title from them?
I think Brian Kerr would be proud of that one, Oisin. A hungry dog runs faster.
Yeah.
I'm gonna write that one down for Brian Kerr for his next game.
I'll trademark that one.
I mentioned 239 players have played for Liverpool since, lads. Just to finish off, because I know there's a lot of United and Chelsea fans hurting out there today. There has been a lot of fun for them over the last couple of years watching Liverpool suffer. Who's your favourite Liverpool signing from that period where they were just in the wasteland?
Oh, well, Paul Konchesky was a good one.
Paul Konchesky is right up there.
He was a good one. Who else did he sign? Aquilani. I liked Aquilani. He was actually a pretty good footballer, but he just seemed to lose it when he went there. Charlie Adam, actually. I think Charlie Adam's probably my favourite one.
Charlie Adam was fantastic. Yeah, I really liked that one. Balotelli, any club that signed someone that previously let fireworks off in his own house, I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, Ricky Lamberton and giving him the number 9. That was criminal. I like Ricky Lambert.
Ricky Lambert was almost like a charity case, though. It's like,
yeah,
he's coming to the end of his career. Let's get him. Let's sign him up for his boyhood club. He scored in all 4 leagues. Let's sign him up.
But it's just a bizarre one.
I think my favorite period was probably that Andy Carroll season where they had bought Andy Carroll for a record fee, $35 million. They had Luis Suarez as well, and they just couldn't figure out how to get both of them onto the pitch at the same time, when really they should have just been concentrating on getting Luis Suarez a bit of support from midfield. We've seen what he did when he actually had Sterling and Coutinho on the side. So that's probably my favourite period watching Liverpool over the last couple of years. But you know what, fair play to them. They are league champions, and they're probably one of the best teams in the last 10-15 years in the Premier League, no doubt. We do have to take a quick break. We will be back with the winners and losers from the return of the Premier League. Stay tuned. All right, you're very welcome back to Team 33, and a call here with you, and I'm joined on the line by Jack O'Toole and Oisin McCairns, because we are running through the winners and losers of the return of the Premier League. If you want to get in touch with the show tonight, text us on 53106, or you can tweet us at Team 33. That's all spelled out in words. Jack, it's been an interesting couple of weeks of the return of the Premier League. Firstly, what are your thoughts on the empty stadiums, the fake crowd noise? Do you like it?
I think like I'd watched a lot of football games and been to like probably a lot of live League of Ireland games sometimes, obviously with like kind of Drogheda United and stuff like that, that, you know, it would have been kind of quiet maybe enough in terms of like maybe attendance. So like for me, in terms of like watching games, I always was happy watching the football, just without the kind of crowd noise. It doesn't really make a huge difference to me, but I have noticed that just looking from some of the stuff that I think it's like with Sky Sports showing both channels, one giving you the crowd noise and the other not, I think 80% of people or some, it's in that 75-80% range actually prefer the crowd noise. So it obviously is something. I still like the, you know, I think even there was a game, Mason Mount had a shot last night that went into the side net, and then there was the goal noise. I kind of just like the, and I think in the Aston Villa Sheffield game in the first one, I think they had a goal celebration for a corner or something like that. So I do kind of like the random kind of mess ups, I suppose. But no, it doesn't really make too much of a difference for me in terms of the crowd noise. But it's definitely been well received anyway across the board.
I think the crowd noise is an interesting one, because I was watching Tottenham and the camera angle, you couldn't really see that there was no fans in the stadium because Tottenham's new stadium is massive. So I actually forgot that there were no crowd in the actual stadium. So once it's done right, then it's actually not that different, and it's been pretty enjoyable to watch. We are going to talk about the winners and losers. Oisin, winners in this last couple of weeks, you're going to argue that it has to be Manchester United. They're on the rise. They've got Paul Pogba back, and that partnership with Fernandes just seems to click exactly like everyone had hoped.
Yeah, they're looking very fluid, I have to say. Even in the Tottenham game, I know that wasn't a fantastic game, but like easing themselves back in. Spurs weren't particularly great either, but against Sheffield United, they looked really, really good. And Anthony Martial as well, it's a fantastic hat-trick he scored. But they look good, yeah. I think they do look really good. I think Pogba and Fernandes is a partnership that can definitely flourish. I think Fernandes is a superb player. I think he's unbelievable. I can't remember really, maybe you could probably say Van Dijk, but a player that's come in and kind of changed the dynamic of the team as much as Fernandes has for Manchester United. They just look a completely different outfit with him there. You've got Rashford as well. I think he's kind of still finding his feet a little bit. But he'll come good again. He'll bang in a few more goals, I'd imagine, before the season ends. So, yeah, they are looking really, they're looking very fluid. Pogba especially, I don't know if, like, I was really looking forward to seeing the Pogba and Fernandes partnership, but I think kind of deep down I was thinking maybe it won't click, or maybe Pogba, I don't know if he'd be a bit iffy when he comes back or what the story will be. But against Sheffield United especially, I think it worked really, really well, and they outran them, and they were just by far the better side there. So yeah, I think United have to be considered a winner so far in the couple of games that we've seen.
Well, that's the first Premier League hat-trick that a Manchester United player has scored since the Alex Ferguson era. And that's probably the game against Sheffield United was probably the most dominant I've seen them since the Premier League era in terms of just controlling the pace of the game. Pogba was playing as a proper number 8, Fernandes playing as the creative midfielder in number 10. I do think they still need probably a sitting midfielder, sort of like a Wilfred Ndidi, that's going to do the hard work in midfield, and they probably do need another centre half. But if you look at the likes of Greenwood as well, who's bulked up, he's like the lad who goes away for his TY holidays and comes back with he's grown 5 inches and his voice has dropped a couple of octaves. Like he's grown into a proper man. So it's definitely, there's something growing at Manchester United. The problem is there's been quite a few false dawns over the last couple of years, and you kind of worry that they're in the same situation Liverpool were in maybe 10 years ago, where they think something good is building and they just won't capitalise on it. Jack, what have you made of them over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, like obviously, like they benched Pogba for the first game, but he was obviously, he came on, he won that penalty, and it's been good to see him and Bruno play together. I think a lot of people have been waiting for it. Yeah, didn't quite consider the Mason Greenwood transition year analogy, but I accept it all the same. I do think, I was only having a conversation about this last night. I think they need another winger. I'd like to see Greenwood. I think he's a good prospect, but I'd like to kind of see him come off the bench more of a squad player. For me, I definitely think they need a defensive mid. I don't know how you feel about Fred. I think he's probably had a decent season, but I'd probably put him and Matic in as squad players. Maybe McTominay can kind of fill that role long term, but I definitely think they need a defensive midfielder. I'm not convinced entirely on Luke Shaw. I know they've Brandon Williams as well, but maybe left back's another position. So they definitely still have a couple of things. I think wing, defensive midfield, and left back are probably areas that they probably need to go after, and maybe centre back. So we've probably listed maybe half a football team there. But the other than that, look, I think the core of Martial, Rashford, Bruno, Pogba. Maguire, even though he supposed to turn like a bust the other night against Tottenham, I still kind of believe in. And De Gea, I'm not completely ready to jump ship with yet either. So, a couple of signings needed, but I just, you know, it's like when they had the whole run with PSG and when, you know, Ollie's at the wheel, it was good for 8 weeks. But I mean, longer than that, it's you need to see United over 3 months. We can't like take anything over 2 or 3 games.
Well, what I was actually going to ask there was, is David De Gea technically a loser over the last couple of weeks? Because he made that mistake in the first game back, and Dean Henderson is a Man United player again at the end of the month should they not go to extend that loan with Sheffield United. So is his place at risk?
He's probably a winner because Roy Keane didn't actually thump the head off him. But no, I don't think his place is at risk. I think I'd imagine Henderson will probably stay at Sheffield United for the extended whatever amount of games there is left. I think next season his spot is definitely at risk because I think Henderson, I mean, he's shown this season he's a fantastic goalkeeper, and like in a way, it's kind of it's an odd one for United because they know they have this ready-made replacement coming in, but then they have De Gea struggling so much, so it's kind of a bit of a catch-22 a little bit. But in terms of this season or the last few games of this season, no, I don't think De Gea's spot is at risk really. But next season, I definitely think that there's a decision to be made in terms of who is going to be their number one, and I actually do think they'll probably side with Henderson.
Right. Well, Manchester United have gone down as winners this week. A loser for the last 2 weeks, it has to be Arsenal. They've completely capitulated, worse than we could have ever imagined. And then they hand David Luiz a new contract. It's just, the club is in a mess at the minute. They need something to sort it out. They need someone to come in and take charge. And, you know, you kind of feel sorry a little bit for Mikel Arteta because it's his first year in charge. And it does kind of look like he knows what he's doing, but the club is just such a mess at the minute.
It's an absolute shambles. Like, it's the Luiz contract extension absolutely summed it up. Like, I remember I think we were watching the City game, I was watching with you, and you'd kind of rattled off a couple of stats, like, compared to him at Chelsea, and they're just down across the board. Like, it's red card. The thing I'm shocked by is, like, we've known about this by David Luiz for years, like, back to the 2014 World Cup, and even with, like, you know, an international pandemic 3 months out, maybe he's some time to, like, sit back and reflect on maybe how he approaches football. And then you throw him back into the fire and it's just like red cards and just, you know, diving all over the place. It was funny, I was on Who Scored earlier on, just looking up some of his statistics, and it was like strength, concentration. Look, I just don't know what's going on. Like, it's like, to me, I've always been a fan of, like, just put talented footballers on the pitch and, like, let it work out from there. But even in that win they had against Southampton, like, it's like Ozil and Lacazette are on the bench and Mustafi and Xhaka start. And it's just like, I don't know what he's doing. Like, is it kind of a thing where it's like, okay, I don't care where, how talented you are, it's like, I'm going to put in real hard-working players. So, you know, we start seeing more like Joe Willocks and, you know, the other players kind of come in from there. We would give Eddie Nketiah a start as well. But, yeah, it's. I mean, I know they got the win there the other night, but I don't think they're a bit rudderless. And I think the David Luiz contract extension just sums it up. It's like any other club that watched what's happened with him over the last two seasons. I mean, there's a reason, like, Frank Lampard couldn't wait to get him out. Like, they took him off for $8 million, and Arsenal can't give him a contract extension. So that's why, you know, Chelsea are pushing for Champions League and Arsenal are laundering between, between Palace and Sheffield, is it now?
Yeah, they're behind Crystal Palace on points, and Oisin, I'll let you come in a second, but Nathan Mope in that 2-1 win over Arsenal said that the Arsenal players need to learn a little bit of respect for their fellow footballers and almost call them arrogant on the pitch. And Matteo Guendouzi is the man that he was talking about specifically. We saw they had a bust up at the end of the game. There's reports today on Athletic that Matteo Guendouzi is one of the most controversial figures within the Arsenal dressing room at the minute. There's a little bit of a split, and it seems to be that's one of the reasons that he's not around the French squad as well, is because he causes a bit of friction between players. Oisin, what's your thoughts on Arsenal? Is Guendouzi good enough, or do they have any leaders? I know, me personally, I think Guendouzi is actually a great player and a potential leader, but if he's causing friction within the squad, that's not what you want when you're rebuilding.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I do like Guendouzi. I think he's a talented footballer. I think he's probably a little bit too young, a little bit naive in many ways. Yeah, they lack leaders 100%. I mean, you saw, like, it's all well and good fighting with lads after the game and kind of showing a bit of heart after that. But, like, if they did that throughout the game, maybe they wouldn't have lost. You know what I mean? Like, maybe they wouldn't have conceded a last-minute goal. Like, I think some of the players, I think, are kind of, they want to be seen as these kind of big-hearted players, like little confrontations, stuff like that. But I think if they fought like that on the pitch, maybe they wouldn't have half the issues. Do they need leaders? Yes, 100%. I think losing Per Mertesacker, I don't think he was a fantastic, technically a great footballer, and maybe wasn't the best defender, but he was always a leader. I think you could always kind of count on him when he was at that club. But like, since he's left, and they've lost so many players over the years, I just don't think, I know Aubameyang's the captain now, and Aubameyang's arguably their best player. But if you look up and down that squad, I can't really pinpoint who'd kind of be the kind of dressing room leader in a way as well. Like, who's going to kind of grab them all together and kind of say, listen, lads, this has to stop. We have to kind of improve here. I can't really pinpoint what player would do that. Bernd Leno, maybe, but now he's out for a few weeks. So,
well, bizarrely, David Luiz is being pegged as that character. That's why they want him around.
He must be, because, I mean, what else would they offer him a new contract? Because it's not from what he's doing on the pitch.
How do you balance that? How do you balance the need of leaders if your leader is nut job on the pitch?
Yeah.
If he's giving away 3 or 4 goals a game, where do you draw the line? Do you go for a leader or do you go for a top quality player? They probably need both. They need someone to come in like a Virgil van Dijk, who is a leader who leads on the pitch by example and also a leader within the dressing room.
Yeah. I think as well, Luiz, like, he hasn't been put beside fantastic players either. Like, Mustafi is not great. So, like, Rob Holding, I don't mind Rob Holding, but I don't think he's an Arsenal footballer. If you're thinking Arsenal for top 4, top 6, I don't think he's that level. So Luiz isn't necessarily helped in a way where you can kind of put him beside someone who can kind of mask his errors a little bit. Maybe that was the case at Chelsea a couple of times with Cahill, Terry, stuff like that, but it's not the case now. In terms of where do you draw the line, I think the line has to probably be drawn on the pitch. Like, if he's costing you points at the end of the day, probably doesn't necessarily matter how good you are in the dressing room. If when it comes on the pitch, you're the reason your side are losing or you're the reason your side are dropping points, I think it has to be kind of drawn there, the line.
Right, Arsenal.
Yeah, like
have
what?
Been,
oh, sorry, go on.
Sorry, the Arsenal have been losers pretty much this entire season. It's been a disaster. So, the sooner they can finish this season off, the better. Winners again. I have to say Wolves are looking fantastic. They're level on points. Man United look to be pushing for that top four as much as they are. Adama Traore is just fantastic, Jack.
Yeah, like really is. I've been kind of interested by him over the last couple of years. Like obviously came to the Barca system and reportedly had NFL links. So there you go. Maybe a change of sport there, a bit of dual sport going on, but that never came to fruition. But the Middlesbrough, Aston Villa never really kind of set the world on light. I absolutely do not believe him when he says that he doesn't do gym. That guy looks like a heavyweight boxer. Yeah, like I just don't believe that. He's an absolute unit. But no, really, really good. Like even against West Ham there recently, like good crossing, like fast. He looks like he's starting to come together with it. But yeah, I mean, the Wolves are just, there's a lot to really like about them. I think Jimenez has been probably one of the most underrated strikers in the Premier League over the last while. He's been a silent killer. He's definitely done unbelievable for them. And then you just look at their players. Like, I mean, I like Connor Cody, decent centre-back. Obviously, Matt Doherty does really well in as a wing-back with actual kind of, you know, Premier League coaching in there. Neves, Jota, like just really kind of good technically sound players. A lot of Portuguese players there. I think there might be some links on there in the background. But other than that, like real promising, and just basically to see you know, can they hang around there? Like, can they really do what Leicester have done and probably solidify themselves as, you know, a top six, top eight team? And everything that we've seen over the last two seasons suggests that they certainly can. And I'm sure they're probably going to continue to add in the summer as well.
Yeah, definitely throw Pedro Neto onto that list as well, because he's one of the top up-and-coming youngsters in the Premier League so far. And if you look at Wolves' record this year, it's pretty much just been the draws that have been an issue for them as opposed to losses. So there's no reason why they can't build upon this if they don't get Champions League this year. I would say they'll be top four candidates next year, especially with the fact that they can actually attract superstars to the club. So over the next couple of years, it's going to be interesting to see where Wolves go. Oisin, I do want to talk to you about Leeds before we finish, but
no, tremendous.
They're going to be probably promoted to the Premier League, but replacing them in the Championship are the losers from the last couple of weeks. And West Ham, they are in big trouble.
Yeah, you can kind of see why Cam Brady wanted the season voided now, can't you? They're a mess. It's an unusual one as well, because if I look up and down West Ham squad, they have some seriously talented players. Like Felipe Anderson's a great player. I actually really rate your man, Yarmolenko. I think he's excellent. Issa Diop is great at the back. They've got Declan Rice. They've got a handful of really good players. And if they do go down, you'd imagine half of them will be snatched. But like, I don't know, is it something that Moyes is doing that he just can't seem to get them all together? Like, they left Yarmolenko on the bench, I think, in the game last week when they needed a goal, stuff like that. Like, I know I like Mikel Antonio, but he's not a striker. I don't know why they keep insisting on playing him there. They probably have nothing else. But yeah, I think West Ham are in serious, serious trouble. It's just, they just don't have any heart. They don't have any fight. Anytime I've seen them play, especially in the last couple of weeks, they just don't really look like they're kind of up for the relegation battle that they're in. And that's probably the key thing there, because you could argue that they have a more talented squad than maybe your likes of your Villas, your Bournemouths, but if those players aren't up for the fight, then I think they probably are one of the... I'd probably have them to go down, definitely.
Yeah, like, they've fallen into the sort of QPR trap of spending, throwing loads of money and buying superstars, but if those superstars get into a relegation scrap, who are you going to trust? It's not them. Felipe Anderson, we started listing off players that were going to leave West Ham if they do go down, and there's at least five or six nailed-on players, and that just shows you they're not there for the cause of West Ham. They're there to get paid, and they're hoping to be battling for Europe this year. Instead, they're down at the bottom. Felipe Anderson, I think, is definitely gone. The likes of Cresswell is gone. Declan Rice is gone. So if they go, they're not only are they going to be down in the Championship, they're going to be damaged by the amount of money they spent this year, and they're also going to be going to lose some of their proper superstars as well. So they're in serious issue. Another club that are in big trouble are one of my favourites over the last couple of years, Bournemouth. They've stuck in hard. They've kept with Eddie Howe over the last couple of years, but the next few weeks are going to be really dodgy for them in terms of whether they can actually solidify their place in the Premier League. They're in very bad form. Ryan Fraser has refused to come on or refused to play until the end of his contract. Jack, do you reckon this is the year that they failed to hold on? They just about scraped the last couple of years. Are they going down this year?
Yeah, Dominic Solanke has just refused to play well. going back to like Liverpool being winners, like I mean they've sold them the double whammy with Dominic Solanke and Jordan Ibe, haven't they? The Ryan Fraser thing probably sums it up, doesn't it? Like, he's obviously seen the writing on the wall. Eddie Howe, obviously, over the last couple of years has been, fawned over, you know, potential England manager, English manager coming through, etc. I don't mind Eddie Howe, but this is it just hasn't worked for them. So Callum Wilson, when he's been good and he's been able to stay on the pitch, they've looked productive, but like he hasn't been able to, he's always had injury problems, and that's obviously been a big issue with them as well. They just seemingly, I don't know. I think at one stage, I remember doing something on them a couple of years ago. Like, I know they play in, I think, Dean's Court, and it's got less than 10 or 11,000. But I mean, at one stage, they'd gotten to the top richest 30 team clubs in the world. And that obviously gives you a level of financial clout where you can compete. But I don't know. Like, I don't know what you use. Like, who have they signed? Harry Wilson, maybe? On loan?
Their recruitment has been really bad.
It's really made a difference. Like,
yeah, their recruitment has been awful. I think one of their biggest issues for Bournemouth, if they do go down, is that they were really banking on being a solid Premier League club this year, and they have plans to move into a new stadium and build a new stadium. So if they do go down to the Championship, that's going to put that plan to the wayward, I'm sure. But their recruitment has been awful. Like, I mean, if you look at their signings over the last couple of years, you're looking at Stanislas, like those, Jordan Ibe, those type of players. The last good signing they had was Nathan Ake. And I mean, if they go to the Championship, he's straight out the door. So it might be all for nothing at the end of the day for Eddie Howe. He might be wishing he jumped ship when he got the chance. But hopefully Bournemouth stay up, because I actually kind of like them, but they are going down as a loser for this week. So to round up the winners and losers this week, Man United, they are winners. We mentioned Liverpool. They're winners. They're the league winners from the weekend. Wolves are winners, and the losers, Arsenal, West Ham and Bournemouth. Oisin, I mentioned Leeds there. Are they going to be winners over the next couple of weeks? Are they coming up to the Championship? How excited are you by the prospect of that?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, seeing all the Liverpool celebrations last night had me absolutely sweating. I was like, if Leeds bottle this now, I don't know if I can show my face anywhere ever again. But yeah, they should do it. They're still 7 points clear. I think they're blessed in a way that Fulham are not an exceptional team, and I don't think they'll put together a run that will be good enough to catch 7 points. Same with Brentford. I think Brentford are probably a little bit of a dark horse. They're a really, really good side, especially going forward. But again, like that, what they'd have to win, I think they'd have to win five of the seven games or something like that. Definitely like seven of the remaining games, and I just don't think that's possible there. There is a little part of me that's kind of like, don't do it, because the Cardiff defeat, I think, had all the hallmarks, even before the game, it had all the hallmarks of a typical Leeds defeat under Bielsa. Cardiff are a hardworking team, pumped the ball long, they've got a big striker, they take their chances, which is crucial, which Leeds absolutely don't do. They're not a possession-based team, they're going to get into you. So before the game, that game, I kind of, in the back of my mind, I was like, okay, if this is a defeat, it's a typical defeat, so I'm kind of not going to lose too much sleep over it. Do I think that they'll go up? Yeah, I do. I think 7 points is a big gap still in a league that is so topsy-turvy up and down. Their fixtures are really nice as well. After Fulham, I don't think they play any of the rest of the top six after that. So, yeah, I think it is the season to do it. I think they can't be caught now. 7 points should be enough, but if they do bottle it, please, this clip, piece of audio will live on forever if they do bottle it. But no, I don't think they will.
Well, between Leeds fans and Liverpool fans over the last couple of years, it's about time that it's their time to shine. So if Leeds do get promoted, which they probably will, what approach do you think they'll take? Will they go down the Fulham route, the Norwich route, in terms of just playing football as they played in the Championship? Or do you think they'll go Aston Villa's route and try to spend a little bit of money and build the squad up? Do Leeds have the money for that anymore? Are the owners investing in the club, or where do they stand on that?
Yeah, I think there is money there to spend, but I think Bielsa is so hard-nosed that I think he'll want the majority of the players that came up with him, I think he'll want to stick with.
Surely they'll need a new striker, though, will they?
They will need a new striker. I think Patrick Bamford, I like Patrick Bamford a lot. And what he brings to the Leeds team, I think, is different to so many other strikers in terms that the way he holds the ball up, the way he brings players in, but he just misses too many chances. And you're not going to get the chances in the Premier League that he gets in the Championship. So he can kind of, in a funny way, I don't want to say he can afford to miss chances. He missed 27 big chances this season. I don't think he can afford to miss them, but he kind of gets a little bit of a pass, a little bit more, because you're not going to get, what, 8-7 chances to score against the likes of Manchester United, Liverpool, Manchester City, as you would against like Hull or Luton or someone like that. So yeah, I think they probably do need a new striker. But then, like, the way Bielsa is so rigid, and he believes in his player so much, that it wouldn't surprise me if only one or two different options were brought in, and that he sticks to most of the side that have kind of brought him up and that he's stuck with for the last couple of years.
Well, for your sake and ours, I hope that Leeds actually get promoted, because then there will be some real rivalries between Man United and Leeds. It'll be back. Liverpool will be on top.
League.
Liverpool will be on top of the league. United will be chasing them, and Super Leeds will be somewhere in between the middle, I think.
Hopefully.
Lower middle.
I'll take ninth.
Half, I'd heard.
No, that was a lie.
I heard a suggestion that used to be a Europa League side, but I won't bring that up on air. Lads, that's all we have time for. Thanks for joining us today.
Cheers, Enda.
We'll take a quick break. Now, welcome back to Team 33. That is all we have time for on tonight's show. My thanks to you for listening. If you want to listen back to any of that show, you can find us as part of the OTB Podcast Network, available now on the brand new OTB Sports app, which is available on the Google Play and Apple Store. If you want to watch back that show, we're available on YouTube as well, youtube.com/offtheball. There's tons of good stuff on Liverpool's title win as well, if you fancy it. Liverpool fans, enjoy it. Soak it all in. It might be 30 years again. Join us next week, same time, same place. But until then, take it away, Johan. Hey,